You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom, first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Monday edition. We learned today that NAFTA is now in the past. We have a new treaty with both Canada and Mexico, although some of the details still need to be worked out, and it's called the United States-Canada Agreement, USMCA. Well, USMC sounds like the United States Marine Corps, and what came to mind was YMCA. For those that were alive and well in the 60s, and that includes Donald Trump, I'm sure he remembers YMCA, a group of village people. And I do have some music that I think is appropriate. I'll let you, at your own leisure, check it out. So what can we expect? Well, first of all, this is a big day for President Trump for the simple reason he promised the American people that he would renegotiate NAFTA, terminate it with extreme prejudice, and he's done it. He's negotiated, and I think everyone wins. A good negotiation, everyone wins. Now, let's hear what President Trump had to say.
Negotiated this new agreement based on the principle of fairness and reciprocity. To me, it's the most important word in trade, because we've been treated so unfairly by so many nations all over the world that we're changing that. We just signed a much better deal with South Korea. We had a horrible, horrible deal, and we just signed that at United Nations, and that's worked out well, and they're happy, we're happy. It's good for jobs, good for a lot of things. When that deal was signed, they said 250,000 jobs will be given by signing this transaction, and they were right. I've said it before, they were right. 250,000 jobs to South Korea, not to the United States. So that's changed, and very much for the better, and this one is a brand new deal. The agreement will govern nearly $1.2 trillion in trade, which makes it the biggest trade deal in the United States history. I want to congratulate U.S. Trade Representative Bob Lighthizer, who has worked. Nobody understands how hard he's worked. No matter when you called him, he was in the office, or he was in somebody else's office doing the same thing. Hey, Bob Lighthizer is great. I've heard it for years. I said, if I ever do this, I want to get Lighthizer to represent us, because he felt the way I did. And the entire team at the USTR standing behind me, and some right here in the audience, I want to thank you all. Fantastic job. Peter Navarro, everybody. Thank you all. Thank you. Fantastic group of people. They love our country. I also want to thank Secretary Mnuchin, Secretary Ross, Secretary Nielsen, Secretary Perdue, Jared Kushner, Peter Navarro, and the United States Ambassador to Canada, Kelly Kraft. Thank you. Thank you, Kelly. Thank you very much. I also want to thank President Peña Nieto of Mexico, who we had a few disagreements, but I really like him a lot. I think he may like me, I'm not sure. But I think he's a terrific person, and he'll be leaving soon, but he's really done a good job and wonderful, wonderful person. And the Mexican president-elect, López Obrador, who has given his support to this agreement, and we're developing a really good relationship, which I think is very important for our country, frankly, and for Mexico. And so they worked together on this. This was done by both. I said, look, I don't want to sign an agreement, and then a new president comes in, they don't like it, and we have difficulty. They worked very much together on it, and I appreciate it from both. I have to certainly give my highest regards to Prime Minister of Canada, Justin Trudeau. A lot of stories came out about Justin and I having difficulty together, and we did over the trade deal. But I'll tell you, it's turned out to be a very, very good deal for both, and a very, very good deal for all three. It puts us in a position that we've never been in before. It's very good when you look at the world and what the world is doing, and when you look at the unfair trade practices that countries are using against the United States. This is a terrific deal for all of us. Once approved by Congress, this new deal will be the most modern, up-to-date, and balanced trade agreement in the history of our country, with the most advanced protections for workers ever developed. If you look at the reviews, people that would normally not, under any circumstances, say good things, because automatically they have to say bad. Even some Democrats say, that's amazing. We had some, they haven't been given the sound bites yet, I guess, Mike. But actually, you had some Democrats say, this is really amazing if he really got all of that. But by tomorrow, I would suspect they'll change their tune. But that's okay, because people know how good it is. It's an amazing deal for a lot of people. Likewise, it will be the most advanced trade deal in the world, with ambitious provisions on the digital economy, patents, very important, financial services, and other areas where the United States has a strong competitive advantage. Mexico and Canada have agreed to strong new labor protections, environmental protections, and new protections for intellectual property. So important. This new deal is an especially great victory for our farmers. Our farmers have gone through a lot over the last 15 years. They've been taken advantage of by everybody. Prices have gone way down. And we're working on some other deals that are going to make them very happy also. But this is a very, very big deal for our farmers. Mexico and Canada will be opened up a lot more than they are now. And I think there'll be a better spirit between the three countries, which is important for our farmers. The agreement will give our farmers and ranchers far greater access to sell American-grown produce in Mexico and in Canada. The deal includes a substantial increase in our farmers' opportunities to export American wheat, poultry, eggs, and dairy, including milk, butter, cheese, yogurt, and ice cream, to name a few. I want to be very specific. I want to be very specific, right? And many other products, but those products were not really being treated fairly as far as those that worked so hard to produce them, and now they're going to be treated fairly. These measures will support many hundreds of thousands of American jobs. This is also a historic win for American manufacturers and American auto workers who have been treated so badly. We've lost so many jobs over the years under NAFTA. Under the current New Deal, and if you look at the current NAFTA deal, the New Deal is taking care of all of these problems, because NAFTA, foreign companies have been allowed to manufacture many of their parts overseas, ship them to Mexico and Canada for assembly, and send their foreign-made cars into the United States with no tax. So we let all our people go. We fire everybody. They make cars. They make products. They make everything in another country. They send them into the United States, no tax. And the cost is very little different. Sometimes it's more for those people that like to talk about cost. With this agreement, we are closing all of these terrible loopholes. They're closed. They're gone. They were a disaster. For example, we are requiring a large portion of every car to be made by high-wage workers, which will greatly reduce foreign outsourcing, which was a tremendous problem, and means more auto parts and automobiles will be manufactured inside the United States. We will be manufacturing many more cars. And our companies won't be leaving the United States, firing their workers and building their cars elsewhere. There's no longer that incentive. Before, under the NAFTA deal, they had that incentive. They have the opposite incentive now. We're not going to be losing our companies. That was, to me, the most important thing. I don't want to see our companies leave and fire our workers, and our workers never get jobs to replace those jobs. Those days are over. This deal will also impose new standards requiring at least 75% of every automobile to be made in North America in order to qualify for the privilege of free access to our markets. And that's what it is. It's a privilege. We don't take it as a privilege. We don't take it as a privilege. It's a privilege for them to do business with us. And I'm not talking about Mexico. I'm talking about everybody. Everybody. It's a privilege for China to do business with us. It's a privilege for the European Union, who has treated us very badly, but that's coming along, to do business with us. Japan, every country, it's a privilege for them to come in and attack the piggy bank. In this, we will have a result of much more happening right here in the United States. It means more than anything else, far more American jobs, and these are high-quality jobs. There are also strong provisions to enforce what's called the rules of origin requirements. This will incentivize billions of dollars in new purchases of U.S.-made automobiles. Once approved, this will be a new dawn for the American auto industry and for the American auto worker. They will see. They understand. They voted for us in large numbers, even though their leadership always goes Democrat. A couple of them said to me, I don't know how I can do it again. Many of them, the leaders would back Democrats and would tell me, you're going to get most of the votes from union workers. And we got most of the votes from workers, period. But the American auto worker was very much behind what we were doing as one primary aspect. It will transform North America back into a manufacturing powerhouse. If you remember, the previous administration said, we're not going to have manufacturing jobs anymore, essentially. We're not going to make things anymore? No, just the opposite. It's going to be a manufacturing powerhouse and allow us to reclaim a supply chain that has been offshored to the world because of unfair trade issues. We also provide brand new intellectual property protections for biologic drugs, which will make North America a haven for medical innovation and development. We want our drugs to be made here. When you talk prescription drugs, we don't like getting them from foreign countries. We don't know what's happening with those drugs, how they're being made. Too important. This landmark agreement will send cash and jobs pouring into the United States and into North America. Good for Canada, good for Mexico. Instead of jobs leaving for overseas, they will be returning back home, and we've already had it. We have many, many car companies. I was with Prime Minister Abe of Japan. He said, we have sent many car companies to the United States over the last year and a half. It's true, and big expansions. And very importantly, he said, many more are coming because they have an incentive now to be here. People want to be back in the United States again. As I say, the United States is respected again, but it's also respected as to trade and industry. This is a truly extraordinary agreement for the United States, Canada, and Mexico. President Peña, it's so important that the President and I have developed this sort of a bond on trade. Peña Nieto, a man that has done a very good job for Mexico in terms of trade, and Prime Minister Trudeau, who I just spoke to both of them a little while ago. They love their countries. They want to do right for their countries, and that's what they've done. And we've really formed, if you look at this agreement, we formed a great partnership with Mexico and with Canada. And I plan to sign the agreement by the end of November. I then will submit it for approval to Congress, where in theory there should be no trouble, but anything you submit to Congress is trouble, no matter what. It's the single greatest agreement ever signed. They'll say, well, you know, Trump likes it, therefore we're not going to approve it, because that would be good for the Republicans, so therefore we can't approve it. But it will be sent to Congress pursuant to the Trade Promotion Authority Act. This agreement follows on the heels of our successful completion of a new and balanced trade deal with South Korea. Tremendous difference in that deal from what it was. It was a disaster, as I said. To improve the old deal that had killed so many jobs. It also follows on our announcement last week of a new trade negotiation with Japan. Japan would never negotiate with the United States. They say, we're not going to negotiate. They told the previous administration, we're not going to negotiate. I said, you don't have to negotiate, but we're going to put a very, very substantial tax on your car if you don't. By the way, without tariffs, we wouldn't be talking about a deal. Just for those babies out there that keep talking about tariffs. That includes Congress. Oh, please don't charge tariffs. Without tariffs, you wouldn't be, we wouldn't be standing here. I can tell you Bob and all of these folks would not be standing here right now. And we're totally prepared to do that if they don't negotiate. But Japan is wanting to negotiate. Actually, they called about 3 weeks ago. And he's a terrific man, a terrific, just had a tremendous victory. And they said, we'd like to start negotiations immediately. India, which is the tariff king, they called us and they say, we want to start negotiations immediately. When Bob Lighthizer said, what happened? You would never do this. They said, no, we want to keep your president happy. Isn't that nice? Isn't that nice? It's true. They have to keep us happy because they understand that we're wise to what's been happening. India charges tariffs of 100%. And then if we want to put a tariff of 25% on, people will call from Congress. But that's not free trade. And I'd look back to people and say, where do these people come from? Where do they come from? So because of the power of tariffs and the power that we have with tariffs, we, in many cases, won't even have to use them. That's how powerful they are and how good they are. But in many cases, we're not going to have to use them. And in many cases, countries that are charging massive tariffs are eliminating those tariffs. As you know, we have $250 billion at 25% interest with China right now, and we could go $267 billion more. And China wants to talk very badly. And I said, frankly, it's too early to talk. Can't talk now because they're not ready, because they've been ripping us for so many years. It doesn't happen that quickly. And if politically people force it too quickly, you're not going to make the right deal for our workers and for our country. But China wants to talk, and we want to talk to them. And we want them to help us with North Korea. We want them to continue to help us with North Korea. That's very important. The European Union, it's been very tough on the United States. Last year and for many years, they've lost in the vicinity of $150 billion a year. They have massive trade barriers. And they didn't want to come. They didn't want to talk. Jean-Claude, great business person, head of the European Union. Jean-Claude, my friend. I'd say, Jean-Claude, we want to make a deal. He goes, no, 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 we are very happy. I said, you may be happy, but I'm not happy because we have one of the worst deals of any group. We have one of the worst deals with the European Union. And they just didn't want to come because they were happy with the deal. I said, but we're not happy with the deal. And finally, after, you know, going through a whole process, I said, look, we're just going to put a tax of 20% on all of the millions of Mercedes and BMWs. All of the cars, and millions of cars that they sell here that they won't take over there. Farm product that they won't take over there because they have barriers. You can't sell. You're not allowed to. Our farmers aren't allowed to sell over there many of their products, much of their products, most of them. And so I announced that we're going to put a 20% tariff, could be 25, on their cars coming in. And they immediately called and said, we'd like to start negotiations. And we're having a successful negotiation. We'll see what happens. Who knows? I always say, who knows? But we'll see. I have a feeling we'll be successful. A pillar of national security is economic security and trade. National security is not where we lose hundreds of billions of dollars a year. Over the last 5 years, we've averaged $800 billion a year loss on trade. How dumb is that? $800 billion. This group doesn't know about those numbers. I don't even want them to hear those numbers. But the United States in its trade deals has lost, on average, almost $800 billion a year. That's dealing with China, dealing with European Union, with everybody. Japan, Mexico, Canada, everybody. And we're not going to allow that to happen.
Now, that was Donald Trump today at the White House celebrating an outstanding trade agreement. And I agree that one way to get people to negotiate is impose a high tariff. That usually gets their attention, and that gets them to the negotiating table. And this benefits the American people, consumers, as well as American workers. Yet, who is the big one? It's communist China and the European Union, those two. And why the European Union is coming along, communist China is not. And because they've gotten away with it for so long, it usually takes longer before they come around. And remember what happened in the United Nations Security Council, and I played it two shows ago. What happened? President Trump accused, and rightly accused, the communist Chinese of interfering with our 2018 election. And they were, because they don't want Donald Trump to win in 2020. They want to continue to get away with the abuse of a good agreement. They're using the current situation to take advantage of the United States, and Donald Trump wants it to stop, and I think it will. But all negotiations take time. I used to be a negotiator myself, and they do take time. And people have their positions. Many times they dig in their heels, and they don't see that any agreement must be mutually beneficial to all parties. Where you have a one-side situation, it's not good. And if you don't call them on it, and that's the key, you got to call them out. I know this personal experience. They will run right over you. It's not a position for the faint of heart. You got to be confrontational, and you got to tell it the way it is. And eventually they have to decide whether they want to trade, do business in the United States. And I think President Trump is right. Most other businesses from other countries want to be in the United States because we produce over 20% of the world's gross domestic product. That's down from around 25% after World War II. We're still a powerhouse. We are the largest consumer market available, and our population is one of the world's largest, not the largest. It's over 330 million. China and India are ahead of us. And see, the problem with India, until very, very recently, they were very much a socialist economy. They were falling way behind communist China, who also was a socialist economy, but knew that if it really wanted to be a leader, you're going to have to introduce free enterprise competitive market system. And to a certain extent, communist China and India have done that, but one of the problems is many of these companies are run by the government, and they favor government entities. Socialism always fails, and Donald Trump was right when he spoke to the General Assembly, the United Nations General Assembly, to point that out. Unfortunately, we have a generation of Americans, younger people, that frankly don't know what socialism is and think that that's the way to go. That would be a disaster for this country. Unfortunately, we have many on the left, the lying lunatic left losers that believe that socialism is the future. Socialism is the past. They don't seem to understand that knowledge is distributed over all the people in a nation. It's not centralized. And that's why social engineering, industrial policy, trying to run a command and control economy never, never succeeds. You simply don't have enough information because the information is changing all the time and the information is distributed amongst the people. So I salute Donald Trump. I think this is a big win for his trade negotiation team, and I hope we have even bigger wins with the European Union and Communist China. I don't think the Communist Chinese will move out as promptly as they should. And that's all right. Let them twist in the wind. You see, Donald Trump, I think, is linking probably the most important issue confronting the United States. That is nuclear proliferation, both in North Korea and in the Middle East with the Islamic Republic of Iran. And as I've said on several shows, the only reason North Korea has nuclear weapons is because the communist Chinese gave them the technology, the knowledge to produce them. So I think it's been made clear to them, their leadership, that unless North Korea renounces nuclear weapons, destroys its research facilities, its test facilities, its production facilities, both for nuclear weapons and long-range missiles, then at some point an embargo or very high tariffs will be placed on all Chinese goods, and that's happening right now. And I think it's going to go further before the Chinese, communist Chinese, finally give in. They will stretch this out as long as possible, hoping that the Democrats will get back in power. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, but we'll see. And the reason you have to link trade is that's our leverage with the communist Chinese. They have millions of people that are employed in plants manufacturing goods for the United States as well as Europe. And to the extent the United States market is closed, and maybe even the European market is closed, they're going to have millions, tens of millions of unemployed people, and that leads to political instability. And that's the last thing that the Chinese, communist Chinese, want. They don't really, they're a very authoritarian, totalitarian regime. There's very little real freedom in the country. And because of that, if factories have to close, you're going to have millions of Chinese workers, men and women, unemployed. That leads to political instability and could lead to the fall of the Communist Party, the Communist Chinese Communist Party. As far as I'm concerned, the sooner the better. But it's up to the Communist Chinese, its leadership, to come around. They've been getting away with what they've been doing for going on 20 years, so it's going to take a little bit more time. And you got to be willing to, like President Trump said, tariffs. You have to impose tariffs. That'll get their attention because they know if you have a tariff of like 25% or even higher, most Americans can find alternative goods and services to spend their money on. They don't need to pay higher prices and won't pay. So a lot of doors will be slamming shut against communist Chinese goods. So it was a big win for, I think, the United States, Canada, and Mexico today. And President Trump was right to celebrate. And yes, there are details that have to be worked out. In my show prep information, I give you a lot more details. For the sake of time, I'm not going to go over them. There's one thing, though, I need to say, because I think it's being a little bit overdone. Yes, dairy products get access now. I understand it's 3.6%. I've seen two numbers, 3.5, 3.6, of the Canadian market, and that's up from 3%. And that's good news for dairy farmers. But you see, one of the problems in trade, and agriculture is the best example of it, politicians, whether it's in Canada, France, Germany, other countries, even the United States, politicians protect and parties protect the farmers. And that's why it's difficult to get access for U.S. agricultural goods into these countries. It takes a lot of negotiation. And even then, you're not getting that much. So at least we'll be selling some dairy products into Canada, but it's not anywhere near a free market system. Not at all. Keep that in mind. Now, there are a lot of, the key is, how do you enforce this agreement? And that remains to be seen. The details are not really totally ironed out. There are also provisions for intellectual property, patent protection, especially in prescription drugs, extending the period from 8 to 10 years, and that helps U.S. manufacturers, as well as extending, increasing the length of time for authors' books or music, photography. Currently, it's protected for 50 years. This would extend it out to 75 years. And that would bring it in line with the U.S. Law. A small thing, but if you live on the border, important thing. Now Canadians can take $40 in Canadian goods across the border, duty-free. And the e-commerce dollar number goes to $150 duty-free. So we no longer are going to call it NAFTA. We're going to call it the United States-Mexican-Canadian Agreement. But one thing needs to be understood, and this is important. Congress needs to pass this. While the president has the power to negotiate it, it's up to Congress, House and Senate, to approve these changes. And clearly, if the Democratic Party wins control of the House, the Senate, or both, they're not going to go along with all of this. So this is thus another reason why I think more and more people are going to be turning out in November, and I think we're going to see a red wave. And we're about 5 weeks to Election Day on November 6th. Now, also in the news, not surprisingly, is the Kavanaugh confirmation. Now, at this gathering of the press, after Donald Trump had made his remarks on trade, yes, there are more questions about the FBI investigation. And let me just play what President Trump said.
Thank you, Mr. President. In a tweet this weekend, you said it's incorrect to say that you're limiting the scope of the FBI investigation into Judge Kavanaugh. But your own statement on Friday made it very clear. You said this investigation must be limited in scope. So which is it?
Well, no, I didn't say anything on Friday. What I said is, let the Senate decide whatever they want to do is okay with me. And also the FBI. I think the FBI should do what they have to do to get to the answer. At the same time, just so we all understand, this is our seventh investigation of a man who has really, you know, you look at his life until this happened. What a change he's gone through. What his family's gone through. The trauma for a man that's never had any accusation, he's never had a bad statement about him. I think he was number one in his class at Yale. He was number one in his law school at Yale. And then what he's gone through over the last 3 weeks is incredible. So I want the FBI, this is now their seventh investigation. So it's not like they're, you know, just starting. I want them to do a very comprehensive investigation, whatever that means according to the senators and the Republicans and the Republican majority. I want them to do that. I want it to be comprehensive. I actually think it's a good thing for Judge Kavanaugh. I think it's actually a good thing, not a bad thing. I think it's a good thing. Now, with that being said, I'd like it to go quickly. And the reason I'd like it to go quickly, very simple. It's so simple. Because it's unfair to him at this point. What his wife is going through, what his beautiful children are going through, is not describable. It's not describable. It's not fair. I think it's fair to do it to me because, you know, I've been going from day one. I've been from long before I got to office, you've been doing it. It's almost became, I think for me, it's like a part of my job description to handle this crap. But as far as, this is a man that this is not from his world. And you know what? If they're not going to want him, and I think that would be a shame, I'm with him all the way. I mean, a charge made or said to have occurred 36 years ago, and nothing happened since. And look, I feel badly for all parties. I feel badly for everybody. I feel badly for our country. This is so bad for our country. But I will tell you, I watched those senators on the Democrat side, and I thought it was a disgrace, and partially because I know them. I know them too well, and you know what? They are not angels.
Are you saying your White House has put no limitations on...
No, my White House is doing whatever the senators want. No.
Who they should interview...
You don't understand what I'm saying. You do understand. You just don't want to report it that way. Just so you understand, my White House will do whatever the senators want. I'm open to whatever they want. The one thing I want is speed. Now, they started, I believe, on Friday. Could have even been a little bit earlier than that, but they started... They have worked round the clock on Saturday, Sunday. They're working right now. I mean, they're covering a lot of territory. This is the seventh investigation of Judge Kavanaugh, number seven. This isn't number one. They started on Friday. They worked all weekend. They've gone late into the evenings. The FBI is really working hard, and they're putting in a lot of hours. So hopefully they can come up with what everybody's looking for. But no, I'm guided by the Senate. I want to make the Senate happy, because ultimately they're making the judgment. I'm not making the judgment. I've already made my judgment. The Senate is making a judgment on Judge Kavanaugh. That's a very important thing to do. Yes, go ahead, Peter. Go ahead.
I'm going to leave it there, but you can see that President Trump is 100% behind Kavanaugh, and he's left it up to the Senate to decide what they need from the FBI, and the FBI probably sooner rather than later. I said definitely this week. Could be maybe tomorrow, maybe Friday, at the latest Saturday, that we're going to get a vote. Now, I don't know how the vote's going to go, but I wanted you to hear something. And if you're a regular listener to the show, you know I'm not a big fan of Mitch McConnell. He's been there forever, 36 years. I'm very much a proponent of term limits, 12 years for senators, 12 years for representatives. We need to get new blood. You couldn't help but look at the ages of these people, and I'm in their age group. Don't get me wrong, but you need new people. It's not so much age, it's new thinking. And people get comfortable in their positions. So I'm not a fan of long serving. In other words, 2 terms for a senator, 6 terms for a representative, up and out. So if you serve your 12 years, go back home and run a business, do something productive for a change. And if you're really good, then become a senator. And if you're really, really good, run for president. But today, Senator Mitch McConnell summed up where we're at in terms of the Kavanaugh situation and what happened. And I thought it was outstanding. It needed to be said. Listen in.
The confirmation process for Judge Brett Kavanaugh, one of the most qualified and most impressive Supreme Court nominees in our nation's history, is moving forward. On Friday, the Judiciary Committee reported this nomination favorably. Then here on the floor, we officially moved to take up the nomination. Every Republican member of the committee agreed that Judge Kavanaugh should be reported out with a favorable recommendation, and every Democrat voted in opposition. And in some cases, before he or anyone had even been nominated. And they didn't mince any words, Mr. President. The way one Democratic member of the Judiciary Committee put it, supporters of Judge Kavanaugh are, quote, listen to this, complicit in the evil. That's a Democratic member of the Judiciary Committee.
That's why I call them the lying lunatic left. They are, how should I say, they're going so far out that they forget that the American people are not only not following them, they're abandoning the Democratic Party.
Another Democrat on the committee, before Judge Kavanaugh was even named, described in almost apocalyptic terms the consequences of whomever the president might nominate. Here was the quote. We're looking at the destruction of the Constitution of the United States, as far as I can tell. And here was the Democratic leader, just hours after Judge Kavanaugh was nominated. I will oppose him with everything I've got. Well, they've certainly done just that. They've done just that. The ranking Democrat on the committee first heard from Dr. Ford on July the 30th, did our colleague alert the chairman so the committee could do due diligence in a confidential way consistent with Dr. Ford's wishes?
Now, that was Senator from California, Dianne Feinstein.
No, she did not. Did she discreetly raise the issue with Judge Kavanaugh during her private meeting with him on August the 20th? She didn't do that either. As best we can tell, the Democrats chose to keep this allegation secret rather than investigating in a bipartisan and timely way. In fact, Mr. President, they held it in reserve. But meanwhile, senior senator from California or her office were already in communication with Dr. Ford. In fact, her office had already recommended Dr. Ford retain a particular Washington, D.C. law firm. Now, Mr. President, the firm in question is not exactly foreign to Democratic politics. Two of its founding partners, including one of the attorneys who personally appeared at the hearing to represent Dr. Ford, had until recently been scheduled to hold a fundraiser for one of our Senate Democratic colleagues tonight. Oh, and by the way, the firm had also represented in another matter the person who has made the most salacious and disgusting accusations against Judge Kavanaugh as a high school student. This is the firm the Judiciary Committee Democrats recommended to Dr. Ford. Not long thereafter, of course, Dr. Ford's letter to the senior senator from California wound up in the hands of the press. The same letter in which she asked for confidentiality was leaked. By whom? As best I can tell, nobody had possession of this letter except for Dr. Ford's Democratic congresswoman, the Democratic side of the Judiciary Committee, and presumably the politically connected lawyers they recommended to Dr. Ford. And somehow, it ended up in the press. Dr. Ford's plea for privacy was brushed aside, a predictable media circus was launched. Of course, the questionable and concerning handling of this matter didn't stop there. In her testimony, Dr. Ford seemed surprised that Chairman Grassley had offered her legal team a number of more discreet and less burdensome ways to share her story if she preferred. The chairman had offered to fly investigators out to Florida, to California, or anywhere else for a private interview at a time and a place of Dr. Ford's choosing. Apparently, Mr. President, neither of our Democratic colleagues nor the lawyers they recommended felt it was necessary to make these options clear to Dr. Ford. She told the committee, quote, "I wasn't clear on what the offer was. I would have been happy to speak with you out there," referring to California. "It wasn't clear to me that was the case." So, Mr. President, let's take stock of all this. The ranking member withheld serious allegations from committee colleagues, precluding any chance that they would be handled with sensitivity and discretion. Meanwhile, her staff made recommendations that the accuser retain specific politically connected counsel. Then her confidential account reached the media faster than it reached either the chairman of the committee or the FBI, which our colleagues have been insisting must now look into it. And finally, we have reason to believe that Dr. Ford was not even apprised of the chairman's offers to collect her testimony in ways that might have been less likely to create a media circus and less burdensome on her. It's almost as if Dr. Ford didn't want a Washington, D.C.-based media circus, but others with whom she was in contact, on whom she was relying, wanted exactly that. So we've learned that if you confide in Senate Democrats on highly sensitive personal matters, no request for confidentiality will keep you from becoming a household name. And if you're a nominee whose judicial philosophy Senate Democrats deem to be objectionable, no centuries-old standard of presumed innocence will protect your name, your family, or your reputation from irreparable damage. Now, fortunately, Chairman Grassley has taken action to clean up this mess. Last Thursday, he supervised a professional and respectful hearing. He retained an experienced sex crimes prosecutor to methodically collect the details of Dr. Ford's recollections. This is a professional who was recognized as Outstanding Arizona Sexual Assault Prosecutor of the Year by former Democratic Governor Janet Napolitano, a former Cabinet Secretary of President Obama, and herself a member of the Anita Hill legal team back in 1991. Here's what she wrote in her memo to members following the hearing. A he said, she said case is incredibly difficult to prove. But this case is even weaker than that. Dr. Ford identified other witnesses to the event, and those witnesses either refuted her allegation or failed to corroborate them. I do not think that a reasonable prosecutor would bring this case based on the evidence before the committee, nor do I think this evidence is sufficient to satisfy the preponderance of evidence standard, that is a lower standard.
Now that's very important, and that is news. The lady that was questioning Dr. Ford, that was her conclusion. That was the same conclusion that I came up with, Senator Lindsey Graham came up with. It's not enough to accuse someone of a serious crime. You got to have evidence. She didn't know when this occurred. She didn't know where it occurred. She didn't know how she got there, how she got home. And I think the final point is critical. People that she said were there said either I'm not there or I have no recollection of it. No prosecutor would dare go into court and try to pursue this, whether it's Maryland or California or wherever you're at. In court, you got to have evidence. You got to have facts. You got to have the details. And you got to have witnesses that support your charge. Dr. Ford has none of that. She can be emotional, incredible, and she can believe it, but a jury would never believe it. That's why it would never, never go forward. And I think that's why she wanted to make this accusation, which is serious, sexual assault, not in public. She was forced to do that because she was betrayed by the Democrats on that committee and forced into a very public situation. And I think her own attorneys did not give her all the information.
So will our Democratic colleagues listen to this expert opinion, although it conflicts with their political mission? Don't hold your breath. Nor am I optimistic they will stay consistent and accept the conclusions of the supplemental background investigation the FBI is now conducting on top of its 6 prior investigations of Judge Kavanaugh. Democrats demanded a supplemental investigation. They proclaimed it would be a game changer. The Democratic leader and the ranking Democrat on the committee both said recently that an FBI investigation can be completed in less than a week. But Mr. President, I'd bet almost anything that after it runs its course in the next few days, we will then be treated to a lecture. A lecture short of a totally unbounded fishing expedition of indefinite duration is too limited or too arbitrary or somehow insufficient. We all know that's coming. If you listen carefully, Mr. President, you can practically hear the sounds of the Democrats moving the goalposts. Remember, back in the summer, Democrats said there weren't enough documents to get a good sense of Judge Kavanaugh's career. Then we heard there were too many documents. Then once Dr. Ford's private allegation was mysteriously made public, we couldn't possibly move forward until we heard from them both. Then, after neither the hearing nor the statements of supposed witnesses yielded any corroborating evidence, and in fact produced evidence that supported Judge Kavanaugh, we were told only an FBI investigation would resolve this and that it could be done promptly. Well, let me go out on a limb, Mr. President. Let me make a small prediction. Soon enough, the goalposts will be on the move once again. And I would respectfully say to my colleagues, do these actions suggest this has ever been about finding the truth? Anybody believe that?
Nobody believes it. The American people don't believe it because they don't believe this is fair. It's not. It's disgusting what happened. And I think this has backfired big time on the Democratic Party. I think it's going to hurt them in the midterms.
Do these actions suggest that this has ever been about giving Judge Kavanaugh a fair hearing? This institution has seen before episodes somewhat like what we're now seeing from some of our colleagues across the aisle.
What he's referring to is Judge Bork and Judge Clarence Thomas. Bork did not get confirmed, and fortunately, Associate Justice Clarence Thomas did, but it was a close call.
Back during the McCarthy era. In fact, in 1950, character assassination and uncorroborated allegations were being utilized in a very different debate in that era. That's when a distinguished senator from Maine named Margaret Chase Smith, an icon from the great state of our colleagues, Senator Collins, went to the Senate floor to say enough was enough. She gave a speech that guaranteed she'd be in the history of the Senate. She titled it Declaration of Conscience. Here's what she said. I do not like the way in which the Senate has been made a rendezvous for vilification, for selfish political gain at the sacrifice of individual reputations and national unity. Margaret Chase Smith went on. Whether it be a criminal prosecution in court or a character prosecution in the Senate, there is little practical distinction when the life of a person has been ruined. We should listen to these words. They speak as loudly today as they did 68 years ago. In my judgment, the pattern of behavior we've seen confirms what Democrats' own public statements have told us. They're committed to delaying, obstructing, and resisting this nomination with everything they've got. They just want to delay this matter past the election. That's not my supposition, Mr. President. That's their plan. According to another Democratic member of the Judiciary Committee, the junior senator from Hawaii, that's their plan. So soon, I expect we'll hear that the conclusions of the expert prosecutor who questioned both witnesses at last week's hearing aren't reliable, or that the FBI's investigation was not infinite or endless enough for their liking. Maybe we'll hear the real issue is not these uncorroborated allegations of misconduct after all, but rather the fact that Judge Kavanaugh, now listen to this, drank beer in high school and in college. Or the fact that he was rightfully angry. Who wouldn't be? That his good name and his family have been dragged through the mud with a campaign of character assassination based on allegations that lack any corroboration. Who wouldn't be angry about that, Mr. President? Their goalposts keep shifting, but their goal hadn't moved an inch, not an inch. The goal's been the same all along. And so let me make it very clear. The time for endless delay and obstruction has come to a close. Judge Kavanaugh's nomination is out of committee. We're considering it here on the floor. And Mr. President, we'll be voting this week.
That was Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky. Been in the Senate 36 years. I thought it was eloquent. It was an excellent summary. And I pray that Judge Brett Kavanaugh is confirmed this week. It would be a tragedy of the first order if he was not. And the Democratic senators that ran this circus should be ashamed of themselves. Yes, they did engage in a political character assassination. It was a smear campaign assisted by big lie media, the television networks, as well as large city papers that still have enough readers that they print. Now, I think their actions coming so close to November 6th, Election Day, is going to have an unintended consequence. The American people are going to remember this for sure. They would not want to be treated like the judge was, a man of character, integrity, and outstanding public service. This is not what the United States of America is about. We believe individuals are innocent until proven guilty, and there's been no proof so far. Do I think that Judge Kavanaugh, in his youth, in high school, college, maybe drank too many beers? Yeah, so have I, and I dare say many, if not most of you. And yes, we do foolish things when we're under the influence of alcohol. But they have not shown and have no evidence that Judge Kavanaugh, in his youth, sexually assaulted women. If anything, as Senator Lindsey Graham pointed out, if you look at his history, there's no record of this type of behavior at all. Just the opposite. Dozens of women have come forward and said this is not the Judge Kavanaugh that they knew. A gentleman, a scholar. So I hope no later than Friday, hopefully sooner, that Senator Mitch McConnell, following the Senate's procedures, calls for the vote, and Republicans as well as Democratic senators vote to confirm him. In the past, this should have been a vote of 95, 96, 98 to zero, but not today, unfortunately. Now, the next story really is an update. I think you're going to see a red wave. I think many of these local elections are in the process of being nationalized. By who? By President Trump and the fact that the economy is booming. He's delivering on many of his promises. And the one big promise that he's been unable to deliver on, namely the building of the big, beautiful wall, the reason he has been unable to do it is because the Democrats won't give him a penny, whether it's in the House and the Senate. And unfortunately, many of these Republicans, the leadership, and that includes Mitch McConnell, while they'll give him some money, they won't give him enough to build that wall. It takes at least $25 billion to build the wall. But the American people are looking for results. And Donald Trump, while he doesn't get an A+, does get a fairly solid A for delivering on many of his promises. And the few that he hasn't delivered on, there are very good explanations for. You don't have to look far. It's the Democratic Party that's resisting this, delaying it, doing anything because they lost an election that they thought they were going to win. And they haven't gotten over it since. And the reason they're deranged, hysterical, is Donald Trump is succeeding where they have failed. We're approaching near full employment, and we should be growing at 4, 5, 6% in the next 2 years. And the Democrats know if that happens, Donald Trump will get a second term. Now, the two areas that Donald Trump has to deliver on, one is the wall, and he can blame it on Congress, Democrats and Republicans. But at some point, the American people are expecting not only the wall to be built, and I mean the entire wall, and it should only take a year. Once you have the money, you can negotiate contracts. It doesn't take more than a year to build a roughly 2,000-mile wall. Remember, about roughly 300 miles is already built, so we're talking about 1,700 miles. It's going to take money. And money requires both the House and the Senate to appropriate and submit a bill with common language to the president. Well, Donald Trump is ready to sign that bill if Congress can get its act together. So after Judge Kavanaugh is confirmed. We need to focus in on getting the money that the American people want to stop the invasion of this country by illegal aliens. There are 30 to 60 million already here, and they need to be removed and deported, but you also need a wall to stop the continuing invasion of this country every single day. It's going on today. Thousands are illegally entering this country as I speak. That's why the wall is necessary. But unfortunately, the Democratic Party's for open borders, even though the American people, by very wide margins, oppose open borders, which means citizenship for all the illegals that are here. And if you reward illegal behavior, what do you get? You get more illegal behaviors. But that's what the Democrats want. They're replacing their voter base with illegal aliens, because millions are leaving the Democratic Party as well as the Republican Party. The American people are completely disgusted with Congress, both Democrats and Republicans, for not listening to what they want. This is not new, folks. For over 10 years, really going back to the Reagan when he gave amnesty that he later said was his biggest mistake. Why? The promise was, would do this once, and then we would secure the border. Well, we didn't. So the American people have been very, very patient, waiting for the U.S. border with Mexico to be secured. It isn't. And that's only one way they're getting here. The other way is they're coming here legally on a visa, the terms of which is that they leave after a period of time, whether it's a student visa, a business visa, or a tourist. There are many types of visa. They like it here, they stay here, and by staying here, they overstay their visa, and they become illegal aliens. It's not just across the U.S.-Mexican border. Many of them, most of them, are flying in here every day. And then either 6 months, a year, or a couple of years later, they stay. They don't go home. Donald Trump promised that all the illegal aliens that are here will and must go home. Well, we're waiting for that promise, Mr. President. And yes, it does require more money. So yes, why I'm predicting a red wave, Donald Trump and the Republican Party better deliver on their number one promise, and that is to stop the invasion of this country by illegals by building that big, beautiful wall with the door in it, and then proceeding concurrent with it, deporting all the illegal aliens that are here. Now, I'm realistic. When you're talking 30 to 60 million, it's going to take at least 10 years or longer. The American people want a president and a party that delivers on their promises, and that means stopping the illegal aliens that are continuing coming and sending home those that are here, because immigration is a job issue. It's a drug issue. It's a crime issue. It's a national security issue. It's important, and its importance continues to rise in the polls. Economic issues will always be number one or two. But because of the many dimensions of the invasion of this country, and that's exactly what it is, illegal alien invasion, first coming here, breaking into the country, then getting fraudulent documents so they can work here. First they commit a misdemeanor, then a felony, then another felony, and the people that hire these illegals are also committing a felony. It's a crime wave. Yet we have Democratic politicians in cities and states that want to turn their cities and states into sanctuary cities and states. Why? Not because they care for the illegal alien, because they want to make them registered Democrats so they can obtain power and keep power and turn this country to a single party state like communist China. Well, the American people don't want that. So if you want to change, oh yes, you can't vote Democrat. But let me add, you can't vote Republican either. Because why the Democrats want open borders so they can have tens of millions of new voters, the Republican Party wants open borders, and that's why they're not assisting President Trump in building that wall and appropriating enough money so we can at least start deporting several million a year. The Republicans want huge campaign contributions so that the people that want open borders, they want cheap labor. You see, what this is about is political power and cheap labor. The American elite, so-called ruling class, really don't care what you and I think. What they care about is cheap labor, and what the Democratic Party wants is to control the power in this country. So the American people are watching, and they have a chance on November 6th to give a rude awakening to the Democratic Party. And once they get the rude awakening by a red tide rising, then in 2020, the next 2 years, it'll be up to the Republicans to prove again to the American people whether or not they have and put the interest of the American people first. I'm looking at the time. I got to wrap it up. Thank you for listening. And now, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio. WordPress.com